All righty, so certainly welcome to the session. As I was saying to some of the people who were here earlier, I know this is the fourth day, and this is last session, and I'm keeping you from the bicentennial event later on. So I know all of that. However, thank you for being here. I want to see a lot of energy in the room. I'm going to try and give you as much energy as I can to keep you awake, and I told him to crank down the air really, really low so you can't even fall asleep. All right? So this session is, you know, create cross-platform mobile apps with Xamarin that connect to the Office 365 services, all right? As I'm trying to say before, every line in here could be its own topic, and I've delivered probably each one of those already. A session on cross-platform, a session with just totally Xamarin being platform-specific, and talking about Office services. We have 75 minutes to go through how all of that is stitched together. But if you've been following me on Twitter and stuff from a way back, I've told you guys that this information is on my GitHub. So don't worry about that. In fact, I'd rather you know, ask me questions and see what's there than feverishly take notes, because it's a lot of stuff that we have to go through. And we're going to be wearing many hats as well, all right? We're going to be wearing the hats of several different people so we can see the experience as we log on as different users. And we're going to be using different applications and different roles. So I want to make sure that we understand that as well. Who am I? My name is Fabian Williams. I'm a solutions developer, database administrator, and systems engineer. In terms of the certs, I'm a senior technical specialist at K2. I'm 6 weeks in, still a new hire, and we're located at Boot 414 in case you want to stop by and say hello. I do blog, and typically my blogs were started off with business connectivity services, which morphed into workflow, which morphed into mobile, which morphed into Xamarin, and here's where we are right now. Certainly reach out to me, whether it's here at the conference or afterwards via the other vehicles that are there. Very active on Twitter. There's a LinkedIn there. And send me an email at the email address right there. I don't know how many speakers will usually put their email address on their stuff. I am one of them that do it. I caveat it, though, because I say that just as how you guys have full-time jobs, guess what? I have one, too. So even if I don't get back to you, I will certainly get back to you with your answer. I will always reply and say, yep, got your stuff. Give me some cycles. I'll get back at you. But if I don't, bug me, because sometimes things fall under the radar. But I am here to answer questions. It's part of the fact that reason why I'm an MVP for what was previously SharePoint, but now called Office Server and Services, and also Xamarin, which I'm probably sure I'm going to lose soon as well for the acquisition. So here are objectives. I like to start off with a set of objectives so that, you know, we can tie this off at the end and for you to know before we go too far what you're in for, all right? So I can see people running to the door. Hopefully you don't run to the door. However, these are the five stated objectives that I've had for the information that I know I have to cover. We have to discover how Xamarin gets you from zero to hero in record time, right? Xamarin is something that, just as an aside, in 2014, I met James Montemagno. For the guys who have went to the sessions before, was it James Montemagno that you saw? Yeah? Now, he's really active, isn't he? Yeah, extremely animated. I'm not that animated, but I try to keep close. But I met him at MVP Summit, and this is when I was trying to get into mobile, and it was just a horrible experience until I saw what he did and fell in love with Xamarin then. But it does allow, it really shortens that learning curve, and that's what we're trying to, one of my goals here today is to let you know, as C# devs, which hopefully most of you are, you can really leverage that skill set that you've learned for all this time and push you into an environment where you're writing across all three platforms with inside the App Store, really good looking apps, really performant applications. Now, that's the Xamarin part. The next part is to give you an understanding of the API that's available to you in Microsoft Graph and what it provides you. Next, we're gonna look at a truly cross-platform application. And here's where I said that there's a little bit of a nuance, because even though there's Xamarin Forms as well. And Xamarin Forms is a little bit of a flavor of Xamarin that allows you to do more cooler stuff in terms of just, you know, from zero to hero, and it gets you there a lot quicker. But it's built, the use case I usually say is if you have a data-centric application, Xamarin Forms is for you. If you have something that is more gamer-specific or, you know, a lot of, you know, fancy UIs, maybe not, but we'll get into that as well. We're going to deconstruct an application that I already built as a use case for you, which, as I mentioned before, is on GitHub. And that's what we're going to look at. And I'm also going to create one from scratch, but it's going to be like the baking show where, you know, I started off here and I say, this is all the stuff. And then I move it over here and say, here, this isn't nice and lovely. Because it would take phenomenally too long to do it here. And then, you know, I don't want you watching me doing typing errors. So we're going to scaffold out one and take a look at it. But in the end, though, we are going to run the application in iOS and in Windows. And you're going to have to take my word for it that it works in Droid. Because if you guys have ever done mobile before, you know the Droid emulator is like the worst. It's better now, but it is slow. And, you know, managing for time, it's the same code. And that's the stretch of your belief. Because the idea is that with Xamarin.Forms, forms, I'm leveraging the same code. I will show you where the differences are. So, this is just here as a distraction for you. These are all the things that we're covering, as I mentioned before, so I won't belabor this topic. What I will say, if you have phones, you want to take a photograph of this one, because the link at the very top, the one that is in blue, is where the source code of this is right now. So you can go ahead and clone, copy, pull down, whatever you want to do with it. This right here works for everything that you're going to see here today. And as I go forward, because I'm actually doing a couple sessions on this, I will extend it so I'll build out all the things that I didn't have a chance to build out. And you can raise issues there. If you guys are going to do Xamarin Afters, I had a gentleman earlier that came up and asked me some questions about Xamarin. If you are going to download Xamarin, play with it yourself, you know, start off with these or start off with other things that I have. Raise issues, and this will be a great way for us to collaborate because I can always respond back to those issues and we have it documented so people can see. Again, the blog site, and I have a couple gist and recipes out there on GitHub that things that are not really code, but just some nice to know things, and the bit.ly link is there as well. The way the session flow is going to look like is going to be this guy right here. As I mentioned before, we're covering a lot of different things. So I'm going to do some high-end overview for the Xamarin piece, the Microsoft Office Graph API piece, the Xamarin Forms piece, and that's slides. I have to do those, right? But I'm going to try and spend as much time as possible in Postman and also inside Visual Studio so you can see that experience as well. That's, you know, that's the part that you're here for. We're going to look at, we're going to deconstruct the app that I built, and then we're going to do some testing so you can actually see it. And I'll tell you some gotchas along the way. And time for Q&A in the end. So enter this. So if you were in a shop, for those of you that are in a shop that need to build mobile applications, the challenge that you're going to face if you're building these applications for your users, whether they're business to consumer or they're business to business, is that we now live in a world where it's BYOD, right? Bring your own device to work. You know, the days where IT could say, thou shalt do this, they're slowly fading away because we're more distributed. We're more agile. We need to do things on the go, you know? So the only way to achieve this is typically to either have a team of people that are writing either, you know, one team over, team A is doing iOS, team B is doing Android, team C is doing a Windows application, right? Because the disciplines are different, right? If you're doing iOS, you're looking either at Xcode, Objective-C, and Swift. If you're doing Android, it's going to be Java using Eclipse. And if you're, chances are everyone in here can probably, you know, crack open Visual Studio and knock something out quickly. But, having the discipline to do all three in one person is, you know, it's a lot of learning inside there, right? So, and also you'd be maintaining three different, code sets, right? One for iOS, one for Android, and one for Windows. So there's just so much you could scale that for that to work for you. So, you know, that's one approach. It is an approach that you could use. It is definitely going to be 100% native. It's probably going to be built the exact same way you want it. But there's a time factor there as well. How long is it going to take you to do that, to get all three out, all three revs out for people to use, right? So there's the coming of age. I have a prejudice on this one. I won't step up in my soapbox too much, but this is the one where, you know, there is that middle ground, right? How many people here have you heard of Cordova before? Yeah, a few, okay. So if you think of Cordova uses this approach, right? So basically, you're using HTML5, CSS, and JavaScript as a platform abstraction to create your mobile application, which does work. However, this is a little bit of a soapbox. A little bit of a soapbox is that people spend a lot of money on their phones. They do that because they like the experience that the phone provides. Creating something like this is basically giving them a web page modeled down to give a mobile experience, and it's still an abstraction, above the native device. Now, the argument that they usually get when I say that is that they say, well, you can't recognize it. And that's probably true. The only way that you probably can visually see that difference is if you're doing a gaming applications, right? Because then you see the latency. However, I defer back to the one about the fact that people buy their phone for a reason, but I will also say that as compute moves up and transactions move up, that is measurable. And you can and if you want to be performant, this is certainly a way there, but you have where we are right now. Now, some of you may have seen all of this stuff before, and I know I may be rehashing, but for those who have not, so I have to touch on this a little bit. But Xamarin right now is leading the way. In fact, 3 years ago, or no, 2.5 years ago, when I was at Summit, I met with Jeff Tepper. I said, "You guys really need to buy this stuff," you know. And he looked at me and he smiled and he walked away. I really didn't know. Anyone know who Jeff Tepper is here? Okay, he runs SharePoint. The next year, I said, that was the last Summit. I said, "Okay, you guys really have to do this because they're building your stuff because the Xamarin team helped out to create the templates that are used inside Visual Studio." And I don't know if many of you know that. So they were the ones writing it, and So I said, "Okay, they're already doing most of your work. You really need to purchase them." Looked at me and smiled again. The day they announced it, I tweeted out, said, "Jeff Tepper, I was right." Then he liked my tweet. And that was it. But anyway, but my point being is that this was a good idea from the beginning, right? Microsoft, we're all C# devs. This allows you to create shared backend across all three devices using the knowledge that you already have to create a backend, because again, you're tying back into something. Chances are, if you're B2B, B2C, you have some data repository in the backend, some data store that you're trying to get information from. And business logic that you're trying to do. So the data layer and the business logic layer. So if you can do that in shared logic, you're halfway there. In fact, you may already have this already done, and you can repurpose that to be used for mobile, all right? Expose a web service. 25% now you do platform specific, and even that platform specific is done in C#. So 25%, UI for iOS, for Android, for Windows. In fact, the way it looks is something like this. To reemphasize the point, you have your .NET backend where you can touch all of these assemblies, and on a Windows API, you can reach down and touch that phone with the Microsoft phone, .networking, and these other assembly endpoints as well. In iOS, you have the same shared .NET background, but then you can touch the map kit, the UI kit, the iBeacon, and so on and so forth as they add things out. The idea is the consistency is still there. And the takeaway from all of this, though, is that anything that you can do in Objective-C, literally anything you can do in Objective-C, Swift or Java, can be done in C# using Xamarin with Visual Studio. So that's my Xamarin piece. The Office Graph piece, so pivoting over here. So the key thing here, the key takeaway, is that we're talking about data. Now, as Microsoft, moved towards the cloud, in the mobile first, cloud first area, getting there, they had a variety of endpoints for Office 365, all right, for your corporate, your work and school account, and they had endpoints also for your consumer as well, right? And the way that you could get access to them was different. The way that you authenticated was different. So the experience was not the best. The Microsoft Graph, or graph.microsoft.com, provides you somewhat of a federated feel over those endpoints. Those endpoints now are reached from one single URI endpoint. And that represents your data layer. So now, in terms of working with this API, all you have to do is go one place to get it, both if you're a consumer or if you are corporate. So that's the bottom layer. Really, the next layer is all that you really need: authentication and authorization. Who are you? What are you allowed to do, right? And within this, and there is a convergence API that allows you to use the same code that you use for authentication can be used between both consumer again and also work with OpenID Connect and Auth 2.0. So simplifying it for you again from the data aspect and simplifying it for me from the authorization and authentication piece as well, which now frees you up. No matter what you, if you are building for, because for me, I was actually a SharePoint dev. I'm a .NET dev that does SharePoint. But after a while, I'm popping open PHP, I'm popping open Node, You know, as much as I hated JavaScript, I had to learn it and start to crank out stuff there as well. So this now you can use any platform, and even people, and I guess this is the main idea behind it, is that people who are not traditional Microsoft folks can now consume Microsoft services and create applications because it didn't really matter what the platform that you worked on anymore, right? You could always come in and use it. And in the end, what you're doing is that you can create rich applications, you know, for any device, whether it's a desktop, tablet, mobile device, all right? So let's focus a little bit on the data layer and dive a little bit deeper in the experience that we're talking about. Imagine if you're this user, all right? And this user, is the entity that we're working with, right? Because we're working in the context of the user, whether the application is doing stuff on behalf of the user or the user themselves in terms of how we delegate, again, the authentication and the authorization. Is the app in the context of the person? The app is in the context of the app. However, that being said, this person throughout their life, whether they're at school, work, or at home, they're interacting with things like, their files and folders, they're sending emails, there are people that they have inside their contacts list, they're separated from work and also from home. And as they go out there, they have meetings with these people, right? So again, how do you unify that? Unify that again through the Graph API, to the Graph endpoint. So accessing data, no matter whether it's about you, about your users, about your groups or messages, that's all accessible. You can traverse the data. So let's say if you land on yourself, you can look at things and pivot off. So you wrote this, you authored this document in OneNote. Within OneNote, you shared out that URL. You have other people contributing inside that OneNote. So you can see who last modified it. You click on who last modified. Now you're within their profile. So the story gets stretched, very, very sticky in terms of how you can move from one place to the other using the Graph API, traversing it that way. You also have the insights. So the two things that, again, if you ever attend any Microsoft Graph session, you'll hear this. What are you working on? And what's trending around you? So one is the data, one is the insights in that data, right? And insights is extremely important because as we now live in this very connected environment, it's beneficial to be able to see at a moment's instance the information that is most important to you surface to the top. So whether it is that you have a lot of meetings with your manager, then your manager stuff just, holistically is gonna appear closer to the top, or it has the most signals and edges, as you'll hear in API speak. Signals and then the edges in terms of the interactions. So yeah, that as well. And the key thing again is that whether it's school, work, or personal, one endpoint to be able to give you all of that. So one graph to rule them all. I couldn't pass upon that analogy. The endpoint is right there again. The one thing I can tell you right now, and the reason why I have this here, this is just a takeaway slide, is that right now we have version 1.0, where you see the x.x right now, is the published version. And if you're building things in production, you should be using version 1.0. In the application that I've written here today, it is using the beta bits, but when I go to Visual Studio, we will definitely go into that so you can see it. But while I'm in Postman, I will actually show you the differences between what's on the 1.0 version versus what's on the beta version, so you can know what's there, what you can use, and not. It's just more robustness and more features inside the beta bits right now. But understand it's subject to change, and it's also subject to breaking change. So don't put that into production. Whatever you do, don't put it in production. So let's take a look at some Postman. So the first thing I'm going to do, if my token has not expired as yet, I got to go grab my token. Actually, before we do that, let's actually take a look at something. So we're in Microsoft Azure here. Can we all see it in the back, or it needed to be a little bit bigger? Yep, thumbs up. All right. So I am logged in as Fabian at Fabian's World.com is an admin in SharePoint Online. First distinction I want to make. So under Active Directory here, we have my AD item. This is now tying back into the conversation about authentication, authorization. When you're creating an app for to consume these services, you need to first come inside here and you know, and define that app by clicking add right here. I already have one set up for you, so we'll walk through it, and then we can create a new one, you know, if we need to. But the key takeaway here is once you're finished, you're taken back to this page, and you have two things that you need to do. Well, two important things that you need to do. One, copy down this client ID, because you will need it for your application. The return URI is there, but it doesn't really need to be something that resolved. It just needs to be unique to your application. The other important bit is this piece right here. And this is now the authorization piece, right? So you'll see that, because again, we're now talking about the data, it covers site collections for SharePoint, task for Planner, shared contacts, calendars, and whether you're writing to or you're just reading from. There are, I think, 40 permissions, or no, 40 some odd permissions, and I've selected most of them. So here's where you're going to now drill down in terms of what the app can do, what the app can see, and when you're interacting with it, how far you can, again, traverse the tree. All right, so this is the information that starts it off. To do that, we can just go back and show you that experience. It's basically add what I'm developing, and it's demo BRK114. That really doesn't matter. And it's a native application. Redirect to URI, so it can be anything. /BRK1132. Okay. And then once you come inside, once it's finished, what you'll see is that there'll be nothing configured. You're back to the same page as I mentioned before. This you can change at any time. So that's why I say it really doesn't matter. Here's your new client ID. You'll notice that there's nothing there delegated as yet. You need to add an application. And you'll add Microsoft Graph. And once you've added Microsoft Graph, then you come inside here and you make your selection, all right? So that's how easy that is. So now with that said, I don't need this anymore, so we'll leave that right there. Let me go ahead and see if I still have my session handy in Postman. Okay, let's see, send. Oh, still there, all right. Let you know why that was important. So what I'm doing here, I am passing on my bearer token, which is the authorization token that you get back from Active Directory of who you are, so the application knows in which context it is running. So I am actually logged in right now into graph.microsoft.com/v1/me. And as you can see right here, it's giving the information back as I am recognized inside here as an active user. And was that Fabian at Autotob? Let's see again. Again, confusing. There it is, Fabian at Autotob. So basically, it is this user right here, okay, in the cloud. If we go ahead and just swap it out to beta, this is what you have now. So there's a lot more information about you as a user in terms of what plans you have, what are you licensed for. Much more information that allows you to get those signals and edges that we mentioned before. A lot of your SMTP, your SIP addresses, your delegated users, there's a ton of information. So this is one key difference, depending on the app that you're creating, in terms of what you'll need to do to be able to get one feature set over another. So I'm gonna stay in beta right now. That's the first thing I wanted to show you. Now, I'm going to actually do things in here that are designed to actually fail, so you can actually see the authorization work. And I'm going to actually do that right now, because I'm already in this account. I want to hurry up and get out of this account so I can show you another account that I can actually do the work. So that's basically a get. And inside the API, as I mentioned, is full CRUD capability. So create, read, update, and delete. Or in terms of HTTP verb, you know, patch, put, post, and get. So we're gonna, if we wanted to create a user, and right now, as you can see, we have, I believe, 12 users inside here, and we've been running with Ignite 1, Ignite User 1, and Ignite User 2. You see how creative I am. We are going to create one of those right now, but we're logged in. We have the bearer token of Fabian Adetob Williams. So I'm gonna come over inside the body. I'm gonna come in here and do, let's do live session. Just ls and ignite ls. And we will leave everything as is. I'm gonna go ahead and push this across. And what I expect to get is access token. Oh, now it's expired. It bit me. So let me go back over here and get a new token. And this was actually my little cheat here. So that's there. Let me end it here and log in again. Say again one more time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that I said inside AD. Uh-huh. What about them? ARM templates. ARM? I don't know. That's let me know. I don't know about ARM templates for that. You said ARM, right? As a resource manager? Yeah, I'm not sure as yet. I can get back to you on that. This is just totally about Office 365 API, so I'm not sure. That's in the Azure stack. This is in the Office 365 stack, so I'm not sure. But I can find out for you. All right, so I'm going to log in right here. And the one thing I can tell you, if you're doing this experience and using, if you're using a emulator, even I put in my password, you can see how you can see it, then it goes away. So let me just go ahead and move this away here because it is my live ID and I've had people play games with me on session. So sure I can. This has to pass standards and practices for Channel 9. Fabian at adotob.com. Let me go ahead and get my password, which use LastPass. So, Okay, and let's go back. All right, so let me go ahead now and sign in. We will get into this later. I'm doing this now so I can actually get my token. So I'm gonna come down here into data, come right over here into my access token, and I'm gonna grab it. This is the one cheat thing that I did today because I didn't wanna go through the browser and trying to grab stuff from the browser. So back over here into headers and delete that, Control V. And now the body remains the same and I'm gonna go ahead and do this. Now, I'm still gonna get an error, but the error now should be insufficient privileges, right? So the error I was expecting to see. So it's letting you know, again, there's security built in. Authorization and authentication is built in. It does work for you, whether you're coming in from an app, whether you're coming in from you know, something like client-side, you're writing JavaScript, you're writing, you're going through the browser. It is contextual to the user, so you get that. So what I'm gonna do now, I am actually going to log back out of this person and log in with other privilege, and we're gonna look at some more things that you can see using the Graph API, but I wanna be able to create some users and see some other things that I know this user cannot see. So again, I'm gonna go ahead and bounce this guy up. And I am going to log in, and this time I'm gonna log in with Fabian at Fabian's World. And he is a tenant admin, so. And. And go ahead now and click sign in. Before it said Fabian Adetob Williams, now it just says Fabian Williams. And let me go ahead and grab my access token. Control C, copy, and over here to the header, and Now, granted, some of this stuff we could have actually done if we went to the Graph Explorer, which I'll talk about in a minute. Control V. And now I'm different, so I'll go ahead and click send. And here we go. So here's our payload coming back. We have a 201 created as we did the post. And if I go back and look inside here now, we should have that new user. So we'll just refresh this guy right here real quickly. And now we have the Ignite Live Session user, right? So again, the power of the Graph API allowed me to use just the application that I create to create a user. That's just one use case right there. However, the entire point of this is to demonstrate a few other things. So if I wanted to get, let's go ahead and do this. So beta users, Fabian photo. That's not a get. That's not a post, it's a get. Send. We get information back about the user, right? Myself being here. If I try to do this against Fabian at Autotob, right? I get the metadata user. So it's some information you can get, some information you won't get. Let's go ahead and actually do $value. You can see me right there, right? So so the information that you have is simply traversing off the tree, whether you want to do me or whether you want to do, here, this, if I do me here, oops. All right, so you can traverse users, you can traverse yourself, you can, again, create items based on the permissions that you've given and who you are within the organization. And it's easily done through the browser. It's easily done in the application. One of the things that I wanted to show you, however, let me go ahead and come back here and do me quickly. This is important because it ties back to something we're going to do later. Let me go ahead and grab this. I'm going to copy this to here. I'm going to come down here to the JSON Online Viewer. Actually, I don't even need to do it there. I need to come here to the JSON to C#, and do generate. So, as you create applications, everyone here familiar to JSON to C#, right? Yep. Okay. So, quickest cheat way. You may have to do a little bit of cleanup, but the quickest way to grab information coming from the graph and automatically get your classes that you need for your models. So, as I'm going to be working in my application with users, and working with events. Such as which is the calendar items, and working with mail, what I would typically do is I would go into the browser, as I've done here before, get my payload coming back, grab all of the go to JSON C#, grab this, drop it inside my model, and I now have my class. Why is that? Because and this is just me talking now as a non-Blue Badge person, is the documentation that you get from the Graph API gives you a subset of the payload, and maybe for your purposes that's all you need, but I wanted to ensure that I get everything. So if you actually do the call, it's going to bring back all of the attributes, and you can use that to create your classes. If you go to the documentation, you may not get that. So it's just a safer bet to come inside here and create it for you. So that's what we've done here. I won't go into doing mail. I won't go into doing events because it's the same experience. I basically come over here in Postman, and I would say me, events, and I would grab this. And as you can see here, this is basically everything that's on my calendar right now. Just to prove that out, you can see congrats on Mark Perstein. Okay, don't know some of these emails, and probably shouldn't even be doing this, right? Because we never know what we have inside my email. But basically, this is live data coming back from the system. And if I wanted to do users, on support, so not me, so take away me, users. These are all of the users. In fact, let me go back to V1 so you can access V1.0. It's a lot easier to read. These are all the users that are inside the Active Directory that you saw before. So if I do this, I'll just do it one more time. This is actually a nice clean one, and go to JSON to C#. And get rid of that. Control V, generate. Very easy one, right? So you basically have these properties, and to get a list of values, just a list of value of the items up there. And this one is an invalid name, so you'll see me change it later on into something that is more recognizable inside the code, and also providing, using Newton.json, providing the attribute, so when it comes back, it's recognized as JSON. So with that said, let's go ahead and get back to slides. I think I've covered all I needed there. Okay. Continue, slides, okay. All right, so with all of that, what you have is a gateway into the data, the insights, right? So who you are, what you have access to, you can traverse. You see the web standards and you see the secure data access. You see me create something when I had the wrong account and I get it, it bounced me back out. You see me be able to create it with the correct account. So let's talk about Xamarin.Forms now. Let's pivot one more time to another type of Xamarin conversation. So when you're working with Xamarin, we talked already about the 75% shared code base and the 25% platform specific. Welcome to Xamarin.Forms. Xamarin.Forms allows you to get there a little bit quicker because now, besides the 75% shared backend, you also have an extra maybe 20% of shared UI. All right, this now gets you to a place where now you're able to reach your goal a lot quicker because it's only the minute of nuances that you'll have to be able to correct for or adjust for, I should say, in your UI. One of the things that's going to be there, which is particularly important in our example here today, is if you're using ADAL. Now, while there are SDKs for version 1.0, there are no SDKs yet for the beta bits. I prefer to use ADAL because it works so well. And I think I have this up here that I can speak to at the same time, and it'll also address some of the gotchas, is ADAL right here. Let me go down to here. All right. So for quite some time, ADAL was in preview, and if you're going to build applications, you were using preview bits, which means you should not be putting it inside production. But ADAL 3.0 is GA. There are some things that you get, some things that are still not fully baked as yet. And here's the big one right here. Windows Phone is no longer supported in ADAL version 3. All right? Isn't that amazing? All right, now the big gotcha, which I'll talk about, that you'll just hold in your head until we get to Visual Studio, is that when you automatically create a new Xamarin.Forms application in Visual Studio, you're gonna get all the templates, including Windows Phone, all right? And with Xamarin.Forms, you can actually go ahead and just click play, and it'll actually work for you. But chances are you're gonna go and do your views, you're gonna do your models, you're gonna do your all the things that you need to get your app going, and you're gonna pull down your NuGet packages. And ADAL is what you probably be using if you're gonna be building to the Microsoft Graph. If you pull ADAL in. For like iOS, for Android, and you start working away, and then you decide you want to start working with other items in Windows, it's going to error out. I have it in blogged, and the only way to get it back out is to go back and change your targets inside the build, but it means also undoing everything that you've done. So when you start off, I would take out the Windows Phone because it's automatically going to be there. Then add your ADAL, and then you'll be good to go. Then you don't have to be. I got bit by that bug. This is the reason why I called, and they pointed me to this article right here. It doesn't tell you about the gotcha that you're going to feel, but it's there. But the good thing is that this wasn't there before, and with ADAL version 3.0, you now have it is built for cross-platform inherently, and based on the targets that you're trying to hit, because you can target several things. You can target a specific build in Windows 10. You can target a specific iOS version. You can target all of these items and build specifically for what you want, so you know what you are going to be supporting. ADAL will adjust and give you exactly what you need, which again goes towards the reusability of doing Xamarin.Forms, because the 5% that I spoke about before, where I said now you have shared backend, shared UI, this is a nuanced level. If you're using ADAL, you'll see later on how the calls are a little bit different because of the platform specific nature of what we need to do. Because in the end, if you're on a Windows phone and you're trying to launch the main page, it's called something different than in Android, which is a main activity, in iOS, a root controller, and in Windows, something completely different. So the calls are different, so ADAL is a little bit different. And you realize before when I was when I was debugging the app, or it came up with a common consent and it asked me to log in, that's what ADAL is doing right there. It's launching. It recognizes that I'm trying to get to connected services. It launches the common consent screen. I have to log in, and that experience is different across the devices. You'll see it as I demo later on. But this is something that I wanted to make sure that I touched on, because it is needed for what we're going to be doing here. If you are using V1.0, you could go straight to the SDK, and this may not be an issue for you. Okay. Deck and current slide. Okay. All right. So that's at 5%. So what do you get with Xamarin.Forms? Now, as I mentioned before, I touched on it briefly as we entered our conversation, but if you're building something that is data-centric, think Xamarin Forms right off the bat. It is built specifically for that, all right? It's all about getting your data to your users. The view that you're going to expect to see is going to typically be a list view controller to show all of the items. So you have a collection of items, and you also have a single item. So it lends itself to a simpler background, a simpler user interface. So it gets you there a lot quicker. You have, right off the bat, 40 pages, layouts and controls that are there for you out of the box. If you go to Xamarin website, you can see all of them. They give you good examples of how to use them. You haven't seen this as yet, but when I create my project, it's in C#. But the point, it does have two-way data binding. But how many people here love XAML? Few, right? Now, if you do XAML has native two-way data binding built in there already. I'm not a big XAML fan, so I actually code out all of my pages, all of my views in C#. I can see it inside my head, and I just feel better doing it that way. And I just, wire up my data binding myself. However, you can choose one or the other depending on whether you want to go XAML route or if you want to go the C# route. It has built-in navigation. All right, you don't have to worry about that on any devices that you're working on. Android will give you the navigation at the top. Windows will give it at the top. Android will also give it in somewhat of the middle. iOS will give it to you at the bottom. Just native. The native experience is there no matter what device you are and you're writing one code. It just understands what device it's on and renders itself for you. And you have the animation API and dependency services. Now, the ADAL that I'm talking about before, the 5% one more time, you'll see that I'm going to be using dependency services to actually get that done. I'm going to create an interface in my portable class library, and I'm going to implement that interface inside my platform specific and reference that assembly, which is I'm going to be my helper class. And that's going to be 5 lines of code and messaging center. Now, when it comes to views or controls that are on the page, there are tons. So remember, I said, because we're doing something that's also cross-platform, you would think, and to some extent it is true, but think about the volume of what you have. The controls need to go across the entire stack as well, whether it's Windows, iOS, or Android. You have all of these controls that are available to you, all of these controls, and more coming. And you can also create your own custom controls as well if you're not happy with what's there. But those controls are going to compile down to the native device and render as it should on the form. In terms of layouts, you have all of these layouts for you as well. You have, I typically, for my application, and actually in the one that I've built, I'm using a combination of stack layout, content view, and scroll view because, again, I'm doing a list. It's a data-centric application, so I'm concerned about how I have my buttons and my labels on the screen, hence the stack layout. I want to be able, if I'm in a list, I want to be able to scroll, so I'm using a scroll view. And I may have a content view. I want everything inside one page. But you have all of this here for you, and you're going to pick and choose the one that suits your needs. In terms of pages, I think there was a question I had before about pages. again, in my application, I'm using a combination of master detail view, so I can actually, you know, see all my list and then jump to a single item. I'm using a tabbed layout, and I'm also using a carousel layout, I think, on one element as well. But these, all of these items come natively for you with Xamarin.Forms. And again, you can create your own controls if that's not the one for you. So let's break out one more time and actually take a look at a solution that I have working right now. Let's go ahead and bounce out of here. In fact, actually, before we do that, let's scaffold out one. Let's get rid of this. Actually, no, let's leave that there because it takes time to come up. Let me go ahead here, right-click, and put a new instance of Visual Studio. I'm going to do a new project. We're already inside cross-platform. Already target a Xamarin.Forms portable, and I'm going to call this here actual demo in CESS. All right, and I'm going to go ahead and click OK. All right? So what this is doing now, if you look at the bottom here, it's adding the Xamarin templates. It's building out our project. It is going to give us several projects in one giant solution. You can do either a shared project, or you can do a portable class library. Again, that is going to be your personal preference, and depending on how you basically run, probably your SDLC, right? Your development lifecycle. I prefer PCLs because then I don't have to do I don't have to worry about my references and putting if else to do conditional references. If you do portable class library, it asks you, like as it's doing right now, what are you targeting, and based on your target, it'll give you exactly what you need for it to work. If it won't work across all of the libraries, the PCL just won't work. So here I'm actually going to go ahead and do OK. Say I want Windows 10. And this actually is more restrictive. If you went with a shared project, then you could go in there and use whatever using statement you want for each particular for each particular platform, and use if to determine whether or not you want to render one for one platform or the other. But in the end, what you have here right off the bat, as I mentioned before, are all of the projects for your Xamarin.Forms and a portable class library. So we have one for Droid, iOS, Universal Windows app, and the Windows Phone. And this is one I said that you'd have to move away from if you're doing ADAL, or at least know that you're not going to be building for it. So what I'd like to show you here, if you've not seen this before, it's relatively quickly, I am going to go ahead and just click debug and just show you how this is good to go right off the bat. That's not good. I didn't choose a, there we go, sorry. Set as startup project and changes from device to simulator and hit my simulator right here. Went too far ahead. All right, so the build started. So I just want to show you that right off the bat, you get a fully functioning application, and you're already halfway along where you need to go to get everything going. Granted, everything is built inside one page, and it doesn't really follow the separation of concerns in terms of moving, views from pages and so on and so forth, but you actually get a working application. So we're going to show it right here. And then we're going to bounce out, and we're going to triage an existing application that's there, and we're going to walk through the process of what this looks like. So I'm waiting for it to come back to us. Why does it say ready? I should have actually killed that because it belonged to the other project. Come on. Okay. All right, so it's starting up the simulator again, connected to the simulator. The experience for this before, and I think someone asked me this question as well, is with the acquisition of Xamarin by Microsoft, it's a little bit hard to be a Xamarin developer as they work through that process because they can't talk about the acquisition. However, they're building stuff for Xamarin Studio at the same time they're building stuff for Visual Studio. So how much do you invest in Xamarin Studio when you know you're going to be absorbed by Microsoft? Previously, I usually work inside Xamarin Studio on the Mac side for when I'm working in iOS. And because I'm using GitHub, then I just basically push everything back up into GitHub and then open up Visual Studio on the other side and work on my Windows. So I used two applications, two IDEs for what I needed to do. Now, because of the acquisition of Xamarin, quit debugging, yes. Everything is now converging on the Visual Studio. That long-winded stuff is just to get to the point where the simulator now is actually inside Visual Studio, whereas before it would pivot you back over into Xamarin. So, and the emulators that you have for Android are getting better as well, because Xamarin also created some nice Android emulators. They were better than the one that you get with Windows and better than the one that you get from Google, but it's still a little bit slow. That's the reason why I'm not going to be using it here today. So let's look at the project that we have here. We go through it. Let's dissect it. So we've already seen in the other example where we had the portable class library and we had these platform-specific items. So in terms of the NuGet package, what we have here basically is ADAL version 3.1, 3.4, Newtonsoft.json for my models, and Xamarin.forms, right? So just that simple. That's all I have in my PCL that's installed right now. I will also tell you that ensure that you are running on the version that you need to run on for both ADAL and also for Xamarin.forms. I have found sometimes that if I go with the most current version in Xamarin.forms, it messes up with ADAL because obviously Xamarin is pushing out updates in a different release cadence than ADAL is, and you may get some gotchas there. I had to scale back down my Xamarin.forms in order to meet this ADAL module. So this is the current Xamarin.forms that's out there, but I'm not using it, and this is the current ADAL and that's what I'm using. So just note that. I said that to say this. So I have three folders that I created: a helper folder, my model folder, and let's take a look at the user one. This is what the one that we did inside Postman. And as you can see, I just basically used JSON to C#, dropped it inside here, annotated from my JSON, and I'm basically going to be working with this guy here, this class called user request, which is basically taking value, which is what you saw with all of those properties above, and my OData context. So I have one of those for mail, one of those for file, and one of those for events. They're just standard classes. And that's for my model. My helper class, as I mentioned before, is just basically an interface. And this interface ties back to this guy here. So Microsoft.identity model at clients and Active Directory is ADAL. And I'm going to use the authenticator within ADAL to get me back my token. So this is you're going to see this pop up here in iOS under helper, where I am implementing that interface. And it is returning back my token, which is what, whenever you see me go back and go to data, I'm retrieving this result. And where I say it's a dependency service, this is up here on line 12. As you can see, I'm employing this is my 5% that is different between all three classes, right? And as I mentioned, not that much line of code. You call your dependency service, you implement it, you get back your your token, which ADAL also gives you both your token and your refresh token, and it watches for expiration as well, and it will refresh. So really, Vittorio, I can't say his last name, but he's one of the guys that lead up the ADAL team. If there's any session that guy is doing, you want to sit in on it. The guy's like the best in ADAL. So this is different. Notice over here, you'll see that I'm targeting the root view controller under the UI application, which only exists for iOS. The difference in Windows, since I'm only going to be doing Windows and not Droid, is same implementation. However, you'll see that it is, UWP, yeah. It's not calling for the UI stack, because this is the Windows implementation of that auth. So that said, The other things to call out is in the app.cs, which is basically the starting point for the Xamarin Forms application, You see me here creating some static strings. I'm calling out to the client ID, the login authority. Again, one authority to rule them all for the tenant that you have on. So I'm targeting my Fabian's World at onmicrosoft.com tenant. The URI, which as mentioned, it just needs to be unique. I'm going against the Graph API. All right. And with this, inside, what I'm doing is I'm calling homepage. So if we dive down into homepage, all homepage is doing is making calls to those static strings inside here, all right? So app.redirect URI, which is that that string that you saw before, going against the dependent services for this specific implementation, which because it is iOS, where am I at? Well, actually, it will call the specific instance, which is going to be whether it's iOS or Android, and going to call an authenticate method. It is async. It is a task. So it is async await, and getting back the information. So what I'm going to do now is actually run through this in. We have 19 minutes. So I'm going to run through this on both iOS and Windows and show you what that experience is like, and then I'll go through some of the nuances of the. Of how I built out the application. So let's just see it work first, so you get that visual representation, and then we'll go deeper. I don't have any breakpoints anymore, right? Yep, that's good. All right, so let me go ahead now and do the Windows one, because you've already seen the iOS one, and then we'll come back to the Windows one. So let's do this guy, and let's do set as startup. And I'm gonna do something that's actually gonna give you an error, but just to call it out, if you just go ahead and press debug, you need to deploy your Windows first, which is deployed to your local development machine, and then you can debug. So that just be a gotcha, don't freak out about that. So I'm gonna go ahead and say deploy, and I'm gonna go ahead and now debug. Now this one should already have a cached user, so I don't have to do anything fancy here. But this is my Windows app, same code. I click login. Welcome Echo Foxtrot. And if you recall, oops, Echo Foxtrot is here, right? That's this guy right here, all right? So I click OK. And you'll notice that Echo it returns all of the users. All right, these are all of the users inside Active Directory. And the use case that I was actually going for, it's a good place, a good time to pause, is to, I originally wanted to create an app that would allow you, it's a simple problem to solve. When you go to a customer site, for me, as in my previous life as a consultant, you know, you go to the guard's desk, you say you have an appointment with XYZ person, you know, you put your name inside something, they look to see, they call up and say, okay, this person's here for you, but there may be several people in your party, right? And then you need to wait until everybody's here, then you go upstairs. Imagine if, obviously this person sent an email invite out to you, right? So it's now an event, right? The person that sends out the email is the organizer. That's an attribute about inside the event. And you are all of the recipients, all of the meeting attendees, which is also a collection inside that same event. Imagine now if you came up to a kiosk, whatever device they want to use, and you say, okay, I'm meeting with this person by clicking on this, and then it said, okay, fine, you're meeting with this person, which meeting are you here for? You click on this meeting because it's an event. Once you click on that meeting, okay, who are you? Then you find your name because you're a member of that meeting. You click on it, and it basically logs you in. It sends an email now to the person saying, you are here, and until everybody's there or however much people that you need to be able to start the meeting, you have now, you've automated a system where you can manage a person through the process. Now, granted, somebody probably still needs to look at your ID and make sure who you are, but it takes away a lot of that takes a lot of the manual work out of the process. So what this initially was is for me to be able to click on this item here and get some information about that person. So it says, you know, meet with Echo, reignite stuff. And now I was supposed to click inside here and then go to the meeting. However, because I'm using the beta bits and I was so invested in getting into showing you some new stuff, the ability to filter by the organizer is still being baked and it's not there as yet. But as I said, because this is in GitHub, when it's done, I will extend it out to you. So that's the one piece in this that is not fully there yet. But this is all of the appointments that Echo Foxtrot has, realize it's only one. I'm gonna log in with a couple different people that's wanna show you what is the difference. And these are all of the emails with Echo Foxtrot right now, two emails. So this is now This is now catered to the person. Everyone who's coming there would have a different experience based on who they are and who they're interacting with. So again, what you're doing, what's happening around you, all of these insights. And imagine, all of these analytics is there for you inside the Graph API. So if you could, again, how does this benefit you as an organization? And this is not me moving from the technical into the business realm now. Imagine if a tremendous amount of your day is filled with meetings. And, you know, how productive are these meetings? You know, now you're able to see things, you know, within that. You can say, you can trend and match how many meetings you have per day. You can see when these meetings trend up and when they trend down. Imagine also that as you're doing these meetings, the experience for the trending around starts to show things that are more relevant for you right at the top. So no, you don't have to be hunting and pecking, trying to find the slide deck for the meeting that you just left. Boom, it's right there for you in the top three items. So this is the Windows experience. Let's go ahead and stop this guy right here. And let's go ahead now and actually do the iOS. I'm gonna log on as somebody completely different for the iOS one. So set as startup project. Yes, please. Yeah. It's telemetry from the app that VS is giving me, Visual Studio is giving me. Now, Xamarin does have its own tester project that you can put in there as well that'll give you more, but this is just totally Visual Studio. Yeah, good question, thank you. All right, so let's go ahead now. I'm gonna log in as Fabian at Fabian's World for this one, so I'm gonna have to avert your eyes again. So this previously was, it would push you back. Oh, and there's one more gotcha I had to talk about as well. I'll do it right now. So before I forget it, you see me now just doing things fluidly by go ahead and clicking your debug so you can launch the simulator. There's a little bit of a gotcha. If you do this right now, currently that I've seen, and you don't have the simulator already started on the Mac side, it either takes forever and time out, or it just breaks on you. It'll basically do a build and just stop. So what I typically do, and let's do it this way. What I typically will do is I would say show iOS simulator here, which starts the simulator over here on the Mac side, and then I will now just run, which starts the application itself. That's just stuff that's still being baked out. All right. VS 15. So let's go ahead and this piece right here, as you can see, the login screen. When I click login, this is the call out into Active Directory. Notice the name at the top, Ignite BRK3114. That was the application that I created inside Active Directory. So, and this is the common consent screen now asking for who I am. So Fabian at com, and let me pop back. Yep, we're back. Okay, sign in, and welcomes me, which is what you can see there on line 63, 64. And here's all of my people again. Again, the scroll view, as I mentioned before. Clicking on this person tells me who they are. And this is purposeful, right? It's something I'm gonna talk about. It is not the best UI experience that you wanna see, but what you're seeing is several different properties popping out there. You're seeing the name of the meeting, the name of all the items in the person's calendar, the person's name. You're seeing a couple of different items on here. What I'm doing is I've customized the cell to make this. So this is the same information that you're actually gonna see right here, except all I'm just doing is returning a title. So Xamarin.Forms, again, can be customized to give you, even within your list view, you can customize the cell, the active cell, and all of the cells inside that list view to show less or more information, whatever you want. And here are all my emails that are inside fabian@theTop.com right now, right? And again, you can click on these to drill down to get more information, and you can do whatever you want. That's it. It is right now I'm using, as I mentioned, just a master detail, a tab control, because these are tabs at the bottom here, and scroll view and a content view. All right? And that's the experience on the iOS side. So let's actually now drill down a little bit so I can talk about it. We talked about the homepage, right? Homepage goes through the authentication. You see the welcome dialogue, and I do a push async to the master page. The master page is nothing more than, so now I'm back up in my PCL, right? So again, this is now the 75-95% stuff that we're talking about. The only thing, and here's the takeaway, the only thing inside my platform-specific stuff is the authenticator implementation of the interface, and inside resources, I have the images, because the images in Android is stored in a different location, and it's stored in iOS, and it's stored in Windows. So yes, you'll have to repeat those images unless you want to make a call to the web for those images as well and have it inside your portable class library. But then you're making an expensive trip, and again, if you're doing mobile, you have to be careful about people's batteries, so the less calls you can make, the better, all right? So the only thing that is platform specific is the images that I have in here and the authenticator. Everything else, the master page now, is a tabbed control, and this is a code for tab control. I have three children inside there, the employees, the appointments, and emails with the icon in each respective area, but all I'm doing is calling out the icon. The platform itself will know, look for this icon in this specific directory because it is compiled onto native code. And within this page now, I have my employees, employees list, user list view, right? And again, very simple information. It's just a returning, creating a list view, getting my model, which is my users, and iterating through the items. The one thing to call out here is I'm overriding the unappearing. I like to be as light as possible. Even though the SDK is there, I'm a big fan of just using HTTP client and just returning information and just parsing through it. So, you know, getting my HTTP client, making my call out to my endpoint, which is beta and users, right? And then returning my users. I'm going through my serialization. And then pushing this inside I have a cell. So what am I using right here? Yeah, exactly. This is my cell. And I'm just pushing out the display name. In the, which one am I looking for? In the master page, my emails, details. And in the detail, I don't think I have anything implemented inside the detail here as of yet. This is just the hello one at the very top. And what I'm doing here is basically, I have, because it's a master detail, I'm passing across, besides just the users, I need to find what the specific user is, so I have a call specifically for that, but the calls are roughly the same. You have the events, you have calendar list, which is events list, calendar list view, same call being made. All you're doing though is hitting a different point of the API and returning back the information that's there. So it's really simple. As you can see, it's not a lot of code. It's a lot of cut and paste, and all I do is just take back the information that I need to be able to return the item that I want. It's the exact same experience as I did inside Postman, except I'm getting the information back now as a JSON object, and I'm basically writing it into the item source property of a list view and returning that information back. Realistically, I was able to knock out my iOS portion in 20 minutes just to get the basic stuff back. And when I start monkeying around with the sellers, obviously it's starting to change how things look. That took me another maybe half a day. And then as I started to build out other items, you know, I started to, you know, try to build more into it. But you can knock this out in probably one full day worth of work and have a minimal viable product to be able to be used. Through the Microsoft Graph that you've seen here so far, they've given you everything that you need, access into Active Directory with the proper person, a delegated list of items, and even within that, let's talk about this a little bit more. It's really good to call it. Even though I'm working with the Microsoft Graph right now, if I came back inside here and went to manage@windowsazure.com. And I drill down into my application. Come on. All right. And I went down here. I kind of know I hurried through this a little bit. And I find my this, which is what you saw at the very top, configure. You can come down here and add as many applications as you want that's here right now into your app. So right now I'm only targeting the Microsoft Graph, but if I wanted to, in fact, your question, you had asked a question about targeting into ARM. I don't see that here, but it wouldn't be out of the ordinary if they'll later on give you the ability to go after Azure templates inside. Actually, there's more than one page. I've never thumbed through it before, and I won't spend it here. But what you probably should do is look to see how many items they're exposed. Active Directory and Azure Service Management API. Well, the Service Management API is there. So what you probably need to do is just look at this and figure out, you know, what services you want to consume. Obviously, SharePoint Online is there. You can target specifically items. OneNote is there. Power BI is there. So you can really build rich applications, and the data is all taken care of for you with just the client ID and just the delegated services that you're putting right here in terms of the permission. Just that simple. So I would encourage you, I think we're working out to 4 minutes, encourage you to go to where I have, for those who came in late, go to where I have this code already done. I have to deliver this session 3 more times, and as I do it 3 more times, I'll add some more stuff to it, clone it, pull it down, give me some issues, give me some things that you'd like to see, and I'll get you further than I am right now. I think it's a great use case. As I explained that problem before, I think everyone has that problem. If you're trying to, you know, get some low-hanging fruits, this will be something good to get. I think I'd fielded the question before about how to get Xamarin. I have an account with Xamarin, which, so it's tied to me. But if you go to Xamarin, you can get a free version, and it's the community version. So the community version runs with Community Visual Studio. So you have everything that you need to actually start off. The one thing I'll tell you is that it's a full functionality. The only thing different is, oh, you can't see that. I just realized that. Sorry. What happened there? That's odd. You should be able to see what's on my screen. That's interesting. Anyway, it's full functionality. Your build size is limited. That's the only difference. So you can't build a big enterprise application, but you'll get all the functionality. So that's all I have for you here. Hopefully this has been good information, and it's really empowered you to see what you can do with the Office Graph and what you can do with Xamarin Forms and what you can build in a really short amount of time. I have a few minutes for questions. I know I'm standing between you and the event, but I'll be right here. Any best practices for Azure?
Key vault. I don't want those keys directly to be embedded in the app.
Then you can do configuration settings, or you can put it inside. We'll talk offline. Now. I know you personally. We'll talk offline. Now. But you can. I would say configuration settings, or a couple approaches. Just whatever best practices you have in your own environment. Any other questions? No. You catch me offline. You got one. Yes.
Is K2 going to bring any special type of compatibility with Xamarin?
Jason, you're still here, aren't you? That's my boss right back there in the black shirt. So I'm 6 weeks in. Since I've gotten there, I've been talking to him about all of the cool things that I think we could be doing with Xamarin, but I'm still 6 weeks in. Reach out. You have my email address now. Reach out to me. I will contact you or stop by the booth. We can have more conversation. But it's something I would like to see.
Okay.
All right. Anybody else? No? Thank you very much for coming out here today. Enjoy the rest of your conference. Mm-hmm.